Well, surprise everyone, I'm here on a Saturday. This is Pam Stahak, I'm your host for Authors on the Air. We're proud to be part of the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network. Thank you for joining us today. Elaine Vietz and I were having so much fun on Wednesday night that Comcast said, forget it, I'm cutting you off. And sure enough, they did. We're only about halfway through the show, and that kind of ticked us off. So I got rid of Comcast, have a new carrier, and Elaine is back with me. Welcome back to the show, Elaine.
I'm delighted to be back. We triumphed over Comcast.
We did. Down with the evil Comcast. I'll be so glad when everything is out of their control and I can go to, you know, someone I don't have to pay for internet and television, which I still have to do, no matter where. It's funny, I say I just want internet. Yeah, but it's more expensive if you just get internet. It's cheaper if you get internet and television. And like you, no TV. So you do what you have to do, but I'm glad to be out of that morass with, you know, the breakup was difficult for them, but not for me. So I'm glad
it's
over.
I'm glad you moved. I'm glad you moved your morass and got out of there.
Thank you. There you go. Good one. So I think when we were talking before, we were so rudely interrupted. We were starting to talk about your new series. You have a new book that's coming out soon called Brainstorm. And this is about a death investigator. And you said to me that you actually went through a death investigator's class. You took a class to understand exactly what a death investigator actually does. Let's go over that one more time, would you?
I did. I went to St. Louis University, which is in St. Louis, Missouri, and their Department of Pathology trains death investigators. And death investigators are the people, when there's a, they work for the medical examiner's office, and when there's a murder, the police have charge of the crime scene, but the death investigator has charge of the body. And so the death investigator goes out and photographs the body. They note all of the wounds on the body. They note the clothing. They note the jewelry. And you have to be really careful because a lot of times when someone dies, the family complains and they said, well, Mama's ring is missing or Daddy's watch is missing. So the death investigator will write down that the deceased is wearing a yellow metal ring with a large clear stone. That's obviously a diamond ring, but we're not trained to, you know, appraise jewelry. And then they'll say they are wearing a gold watch with a Cartier brand. And that is one of the things that, that helps to prevent things disappearing. And what they discovered was in many jurisdictions, the medical examiner, actually the coroner, is elected, and they don't have to have any training.
And they don't have to be a doctor either, do they?
They don't have to be a doctor. They don't have to be trained. One of them actually was, and this is years ago, he drove the ambulance service, and he also picked up wrecks on the highway, in addition to taking care of dead bodies. So it worked out really well for him, but not for the people of that particular county. And so I took what's known as the Medical Legal Death Investigation course. It's a training course, and it's for forensic professionals. And it's a week long. It's 8 hours a day. It's taken by other death investigators. It's taken by medical examiners, a lot of police. And people come for this course from as far away as Australia. So it's a famous and well-known course, and it's difficult. And I was surprised at how nice they were to me because I thought they just considered me another amateur, but they didn't. They were helpful. I made friendships with people, and, you know, I still use them to check things. But I have a list of types of deaths that we discussed. Alcohol and drugs, asphyxia, blunt trauma, child maltreatment, which was horrible, cutting, drowning, electrocution, explosion, exposure, falls, gunshot wounds, head trauma. You want me to keep going?
Yes. Go ahead.
Okay.
I love it.
Injuries at work, lightning, natural causes, neglect, overdose, deaths in police custody, stabbing, strangulation, sudden unexpected infant death, suicide, thermal injury, unexpected death, vehicular-related deaths, and weather-related deaths. And we also looked at things like blood spatter. And I got to the point where at the end of the course, by God, I watched an autopsy at lunch.
Did you really?
Yes, it was a recorded autopsy. I wasn't actually there.
Right.
But they showed it at lunch. And I think I could watch it because it was a video.
Right.
So there's like a screen between me and the fact that this is a dead person. And they talked about something which I use in Brainstorm, my new book, which is body identification. And this becomes a real issue, particularly when the easy way is to just take a look at the dead person, go in their purse or pocket, pick out their driver's license and go, okay, you know, this is whoever it says on the license. But it often doesn't work that way. Suppose you've got a teenager. How many teenagers have real driver's license and how many have themselves as 21 so they can get some booze?
Sure.
And the other way not to identify somebody is by their clothing. And, again, this is a problem with teenagers because girls in particular will swap jewelry, they'll swap jackets.
Yes.
And so you can't use that to identify someone either. And about the only thing, or one of the things they recommend is that you really have to do is teeth. And so my book opens with a car accident in which four teenagers are drinking, doing drugs, and drag racing, and texting. And one of them hits a stone wall at 70 miles an hour. And they are cousins, and one is injured so badly that no one can figure out who's dead and who's alive, which of the two cousins who look very much alike. And so the only way they can identify them is by their dental records, and they have to call the dentist at 3 in the morning, and he emails the dental records to the hospital so they can figure out who's in the ER and which one survived.
Now, that presupposes that people have dental records, too.
Well,
so,
if you don't have dental records, there are other things. Now, take me. I mean, not that you'd want me, but I have extensive dental records, but I've also had a hip replacement. So anytime you've got any kind of medical metal, it's got a serial number, and they can identify you. And, in fact, when I had my hip replaced, one of my friends, who's a pathologist, and I love her, but pathologists tend to be kind of weird, she calls me in the hospital, and she goes, "Hey, congratulations, they can always identify your body, even if they cut off your head." And
oh,
I said,
thank
you,
so
Maria.
Thank you so
that
much
was
for
really
sharing
an
that.
Issue. That was really an issue that was worrying me.
I can
well,
die
now
very peacefully, right?
Knowing that I will be in Forest Lawn with a nice tombstone. Well, now
there
I'm to
go.
The point, since I had brain surgery, that even if they cut off my head and that's all they find, they can still identify me because I've got titanium nails holding my skull together.
You really do?
Yeah.
You're
so,
kidding
you know,
me.
I am. No, I'm really easy to identify.
You're the bionic woman. I mean,
you
know, we have to go through those big metal detectors in the airport. You just can't walk through and go through the little ones because they ask you, do you have any metal in you? And I say, yeah, they get really shook up about that. They asked me to see my scar one time going through going through a really small airport. They didn't have a metal detector that was real fancy. And so the security woman pulled me aside and she said, I need to see your scar. And I said, okay, whatever. You know. All right.
Turned on.
Okay. So I'm going to keep that in mind when I have the other one done in May, and I'm going to ask Dr. Cutie, my surgeon, because he's so cute, I'm going to say, just sign your name on there before you put it in, because this is going to, they're going to know who did the deed if something goes wrong. I'm going to tell him now.
Well, also, if you've got breast implants, those have numbers.
Don't have anything there. They've never met. It's okay. Yeah, you in general, I know.
Nope, you in general, nope, not you personally.
No cavities, no cavities and no implants. Nothing other than my titanium hips. So it's interesting
now,
to note, though.
Really unusual tattoos will help. And one of the pathologists brought his collection of tattoos from autopsies. Photographs, not the real tattoos. And I was surprised at how many people who have done time in the prison system are tattooed with "Born to Lose."
You're kidding, really?
Yeah.
Boy, that's
including a guy.
That's a noir story waiting to happen, isn't it?
It is, and there was one guy who had it tattooed on his forehead, and he was shot right in the forehead. So it's like he knew.
Isn't that bizarre? Now, let's talk about Brainstorm, because that is just too odd for me. Angela Richmond is your death investigator, correct?
Right.
She doesn't have a very easy time of it.
Well, she doesn't. And, you know, I like to do research, but I this time I really did research for this book. 8 years ago, I had 6 strokes, including a hemorrhagic stroke and brain surgery. And I made a complete recovery. But I had originally gone to the ER 3 days before the strokes. By the way, this is not a podunk hospital. It was listed as one of the top 50 in the United States. So I go to the ER with massive headaches, where I'm told by the neurologist, you're too young and fit to have a stroke, and he sends me home. So
yes, they care so much about women's issues. Let's not go there, but, right?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
So 3 days later, I have 6 strokes. My husband finds me, gets me to the hospital. And they come out and tell him, you know, I'm really sorry about your wife. She's not going to make it till morning. But it turns out I did make it, and obviously I'm here. But when I wrote this book, the problem is they put me in a chemical coma for about a week. And so I was on extremely weird drugs, and I had hallucinations, really strange hallucinations. And so I thought, what if my death investigator had a series of strokes and wound up in the hospital, and the doctor who misdiagnosed her was murdered or believed to have been murdered by the doctor who saved her, and she had to investigate this and save the man who saved her, except she's not a reliable investigator. She sees people who aren't there. She talks to people who don't exist. And so nobody believes her. She has no credibility at all. And so this is the story behind Brainstorm. And it's based on my personal experience as someone who had strokes and came back from the dead. Oh, and I got to read my obituary.
Did you really? How bizarre.
Yeah. It was on when a friend was had stopped by to drop off some tickets the night that I had the strokes. And so when she found out I'd been taken to the hospital, she met Don at the hospital. And, you know, they said, no, she's not going to make it. So Barbara writes an obituary and sends it to one of the lists. And what's amazing is a couple of weeks ago I'd been involved in a flame out on a blog where people did. I know you'll find this hard to believe, but people disagreed with something I wrote about, and so they called me all sorts of awful names. And the first people to respond to the obituary and say, Elaine's a wonderful person, a kind person, and the best writer in the world, were the people in the flame war calling me a bitch.
You have to die to find out who your real friends are, right?
I thought, what? What? I read what you wrote about me 2 weeks ago. You said I wasn't fit to sit at a computer, and all of a sudden I'm the greatest writer in the history of mystery reading? What's going on here?
But
it
you
was,
know,
it was really funny.
I love how you've taken your own bit. Well, boy, talk about writing what you know, Elaine. You really did, and this sounds fascinating. But so will Angela be a series character for you?
Yes, I'm working on the second book, which is called Fire and Ashes. And the whole series is set in sort of a mythical world of the 1% called Shoto Forest, which is roughly based on West County in St. Louis, where a lot of the very rich live. But I was a newspaper reporter for 27 years, so now I can tell all these fun stories I couldn't tell in the newspaper about rich people.
Jeez,
so
this is going to be fun. I love this.
I'm having such a good time.
This sounds like right up my – I mean, your other books do too. And, you know, of course, I've been speaking to your publicist who's hurriedly putting together a book bag for me. But it sounds like so much fun, and it sounds like you had a good time writing this.
I did, and it was therapy. You know, to get to kill the man who misdiagnosed me was so satisfying. The only problem was he didn't die in enough pain. But
what?
No, I had to kill him relatively quickly.
Roasting over a slow fire
really didn't work, but I wanted to.
See, what do they say? Don't tick off a thriller writer because, you know, you'll die in a book someplace. You didn't by any chance use his real name, did you?
No.
Okay.
And what really bothers me about this is he's still practicing at that same hospital.
Well, that's a whole nother conversation we have to have on a different show, because that would just pretty much send me off the deep end too. So I understand. I love the fact that you've taken your own stuff. Plus you went and took this class, this death investigator class. And did you have to go to any death scenes when you took this class?
No, I did not, but what we had was death scenes now are videoed.
Yeah.
And so we watched videos. And I have to say I will never again make jokes about cops and donuts, because the day that we did child death, they had brought in some kind of sweet, and I could hear the rustling of paper in that class, and it was the cops, and they were upset. And, you know, they're macho, so they're not going to say, I'm upset that somebody beat a baby to death. Instead, they started eating sweets.
I have to tell you that I worked for a police department as a victim advocate, and the first child abuse case that I saw almost laid me out. I was with the detective. And I had to go and you know, be a part of it to see the child in the hospital. And it just broke my heart. It broke my heart. You know, it's something I never want to – and I've been to homicide scenes and suicides and things like that. And, you know, it's – but the kid crimes are the ones you don't get over. So I can imagine that they had a difficult time. There's no understanding that type of crime, I will say that. So you're writing now Brainstorm. Have you put aside the other series kind of sort of for a little while? Are you going to continue writing them?
I'm going to Well, first of all, I have discontinued the Josie Marcus series,
right.
And I did that about 2 years ago because
right.
I did 10 books in that series, and it was supposed to be a 3-book series. And I felt that I had taken Josie as far as I could, and it was a cozy. So, you know, there's only so much you can do within the rules of the genre. I can't kill her
right.
mother. I can't kill her husband. I can't kill
right.
her pets. So
right.
I hate series that are dragged on. Just,
right.
you know, it's zombie series. So I didn't want a zombie series. So I ended her in a good spot. And with the Helen series, I've just turned in my 15th book, and I'd like to concentrate on going back to the dark side for a while. So I'm not saying no more to Helen, but I am saying that I'm going to put the books on hiatus and concentrate for a while on doing really dark mysteries.
I love that. We, you know, as you know, that we're honoring our women writers this month in because of Women's History Month. What women writers are you particularly fond of?
I like Nancy Picard. I like Charlene Harris. And I like her. I, of course, loved her Vampire series, but
uh-huh.
I also like her new Midnight Crossing series.
Yes.
I think it's very fresh and different. I liked early Sue Grafton. And then about Elle, I thought there was kind of a period where her writing didn't have the snap, or maybe it was me, but she's back at it and as strong as ever.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
I like Amy.
X is amazing. Yeah. X is amazing. I thought she was terrific. It's just weird to me that she never aged her character, not one bit.
Well,
so after all
yeah,
those stories.
And she told me, and this was interesting, that our she didn't tell me. I was at a speech. I listened to a speech that she didn't want to do the Nick and Nora Charles dialogue, so she never really gave her character a long-term lover. She said she didn't want to
right.
write that kind of dialogue, so poor Kinsey was kind of a loner.
A loner in the same age forever, yeah. And has had
the same
every,
age forever.
Yeah, she has so many things happen to her, you know. She'd be in a wheelchair by now had she been a real person from all the, you know, gunshots, the beating up, and everything else that she's gone through, but she's a dynamic character.
Oh,
you
she
know,
is.
She's, yeah.
And her writing is not tired. Another one who's really good is Naomi Hirahara.
Yes.
And I'm not sure how to pronounce her series that won the Edgar. It featured Mas Arai, but she also has a bicycle cop series for Penguin that is just charming. And so I highly recommend her. There are just so many good writers. I think we're in another golden age of mystery writing right now.
I do. I think we are too. The past 2 years have been phenomenal as far as I'm concerned. And, you know, I get 1,000 books pass over my desk every year. And so when you have that many books that you look at and you're making choices on who you want to read and who you want to read for shows, obviously, you know, for an interview or for pleasure, I have a lot of choices. And I'm to the point where there's so many good out there that if somebody doesn't grab me in the first couple of pages, if I can't relate to their protagonist immediately, then they're gone. And I'm sorry to say that, but there's so many good writers now. And even writers who are well-established who are coming out with just new styles of writing and all, it's really amazing to me, Elaine. You know, you're changing
Parrish
it up.
Has got a new book, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
You're changing it up, your own series, and you've got however many books you have out now. And, you know, you're tired of your own writing? Great. Good for you. You're changing it up too. Although I don't think anyone's going to get tired of your writing. You've gotten, you know, so much good press and awards, and gosh, you you really, your writers love you. They write wonderful reviews and everything. Speaking of, do you ever look at your reviews? Do you still need to go every once in a while and say, it's okay, not bad?
No. If someone sends me a note, I will look at it. But I'm actually kind of afraid, because if the review is by a professional, then I'll read it. But if it's not, I mean, I've had people who've complained about the cost of the book, and I can't do anything about that. But I have Aline Cogdell is a very good reviewer, and and about book five, she mentioned something about some characters, and it was a criticism, a good criticism, and I took it to heart, and I remembered that and incorporated it in my later books. So if someone is, you know, what I consider a professional, then yes, I will pay attention. And sometimes my readers will say things, and it really hits me, and I'll pay attention to that. And then there's the people who get very angry with me because Josie didn't have a baby. She married Ted, and they need to have a child. And I said, well, Josie's got a daughter, and, you know, she'd like to know her new husband for a while. No, no, they must pass on their DNA.
Readers can
maybe
get really
not,
they have a very proprietary feel with the authors that they like in their books. So
they
really feel like they know the character probably much better than you do, because they're living that character for a long time. A mention about Aline Cogdell. Lynn was the first reviewer I ever had on my show. She's fantastic. And then last year I had Connie Ogle on, so, and she's fantastic.
Another good one. Yeah.
Yes. And for those of you who don't know, Aline and Connie are the book reviewers for the Miami-Dade County is Connie. She writes for the Herald, and Aline writes for the Sun Sentinel in Broward County. So,
also a host of other things. She's also
host
on
of
the Clatchy Wire.
And
she wrote a book review of mine that wound up in the Malaysia Star.
She gets her stuff goes out everywhere. You never know where it's going to show up. So, and she's very involved with the magazines, and she goes to all the book conferences. She's really terrific. And her husband is the theater critic. So it's really an interesting dynamic. They do everything together. I love it too. They're tons of fun.
Yeah.
And they're
Bill Hirschman is good.
Yeah. Aline and Connie are excellent book reviewers. They actually read all the stuff and can speak to a review better than, I mean, listen, I've read some PW stuff that doesn't make any sense to me. I'm thinking, are you reading the same book as me? So I think
I've read some of those too, where I think this person either didn't finish the review or something, because we read different books.
Exactly. You've been writing for quite a while now, books. When someone asks you what you do, what do you tell them?
I tell them I'm a writer, and I'm a full-time writer. Because it's for me, it's a job. Before I started writing mysteries, I was a newspaper reporter, and a lot of writers start out that way.
They do.
Yeah, Chris Monty, who's one half of P.J. Parrish, she wrote for the Sun Sentinel. Michael Connelly was a reporter.
Right.
And one of the reasons they like us is that for us, writing is a job. We don't wait for inspiration to strike. We know you got to sit at the desk, and we honor deadlines. And so, it's one of the things I think that tends to bias publishers toward us, because we look at writing professionally. You know, we know the muse is not going to come sit at our desk and crown us with flowers. We got to write.
Right. Sure. Well, also, you learn to write in a different way when you're writing for newspapers, because you don't have to do so much narrative on the background. You know, what does the scene look like and all that. You tell the story. It's
mm-hmm.
You get to the meat of the story without having to, you know, tell me every color of every flower on every tree in the park where, you know, the murder took place. I don't need to know that. Leave some things to my imagination. Let me form that movie in my head. So I see that a lot. Whereas, interesting, as you well know, there are a lot of lawyers who are writers. You know, and a big shout out to our friend Paul Levine. And and so I say, well, you guys used to write those briefs that nobody could understand. And so you really do need editors, whereas newspaper people don't, because they know how to write a succinct story with the, you know, who, what, where, when, and how, and why. That's about it. But
well, David Ellis is another good lawyer writer.
Yes.
And I love courtroom dramas. I am a sucker for courtroom dramas.
J.D. Rhodes, another one whom I love his books. I love everything he writes. He'll be on in April 1st, as a matter of fact, with a new kind of a book. It's going to be fun, yeah. When you're not writing, what do you like to do?
This is going to sound like a really bad ad, but I like to go for long walks on the beach. I like to read. I like the company of my husband. We've been married 45 years, and he's fun to be around. We have two cats, it's a really nice life. And when I was in the hospital years ago, and when I was very sick, a nurse told me that is often a time when people decide, they start evaluating their life and saying, do I want to spend the rest of my life with this person, or do I want to keep working this job? And for me, the answer was yes. And so I just wanted my life back. And so I consider myself very lucky that I like the life and I like the work I have.
Boy, you're not kidding. Any glimpse into our own mortality, really, if you don't take stock and look at the things around you. I had a life-changing event as well, and I wake up every day and say, thank you, I'm on this side of the grass. I'm a happy girl, you know. I don't go to work, I go to play. I speak to the most interesting people 4 times a week. And get to go to book conferences and meet them in person. And so I understand that. What's on your bucket list? Give me something on your bucket list.
More vacations.
And where do you like
time
to
vacation?
Where do you like to vacation?
I like to go down to the Keys.
Of course.
They're very laid back. Everybody goes, there's nothing to do. And I said, yes, that's the point.
Yes.
And so we'll go down to a place like Hawks Cay in Duck Key. And it's a total disconnect. Nobody knows where I am. No one has my phone number. My phones are turned off. I don't look at the internet. And I look at the ocean. I look at the water. We go out to dinner, and to me, that is an ideal vacation and a real rest.
We're getting dressed up as putting on a T-shirt with sleeves on it, and but if you have anything more than flip-flops, you're overdressed. So I understand that completely. You know, there's a lot of charm to being in the Keys, and yes, you can go to some nice restaurants, but nobody stands on ceremony, and it is a very, very relaxing place to be. Will you be at the Key West Writers Fest?
No, unfortunately, I'm on deadline, but it's quite good.
I can't wait to go down there. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. And Tim Hallinan is speaking, and somebody else. I just got an email about it. I can't remember, but it'll be a lot of fun, I think. A lot of good writers go down there. Last year I missed Jeffrey Deaver. I couldn't go, but yeah, a lot of. But I saw him at BoucherCon later on, so it's okay. Will you go to BoucherCon this year?
I'm going to BoucherCon, and I have a short story in. There's going to be a new anthology called Blood on the Bayou, and I have a short story that features Helen and Marjorie from the Dead End Job series. They're tourists in New Orleans, and I also there's a second anthology debuting down there with Gary Phillips as the editor. It's called 44 Caliber Funk, and it's set in the 1970s. It's very funny, and I've got a hard-boiled story called His Funkalicious Majesty.
I can't wait. It's going to be fun. I'll look forward to seeing you down there if I don't see you sooner. Elaine, I am so glad that we had a chance to get back together and talk. Elaine Dietz, who is just magnificent. The new book will be out when? Let's talk about when your brainstorm.
The Brainstorm will officially debut the 2nd of August. It's and it'll be a trade paperback and an audiobook and an MP3 CD file. And it's available for pre-order now, so get it while it's cheap.
Yeah, it's very inexpensive. It's only $3.99, so I'm going to go place my order. But you also have another Dead End Job coming out in May, correct?
I do, and it's called The Art of Murder, and it's a hardcover. I'm very excited by it. It's set at the Bonnet House, and the murder,
right.
By the way, I made this deal with Bonnet House. The murder does not take place at Bonnet House.
They don't want any blood on the Bonnet House. So
no blood on Bonnet House. But if you're in Fort Lauderdale, please visit Bonnet House. It's not your average museum.
It's not fun.
It really
is
fun.
We talked about that,
colorful.
And it really is. And I'm calling you next time I'm in Fort Lauderdale. So, and we'll go out to lunch if I can pull you away from your laptop. Deal.
Well, not only can you do that, but I actually have a I'm a friend of Bonnet House, so I get in free and I can get you in for half price.
There we go. We'll go. We'll make a day of it.
Okay. It's a deal.
I'm so glad you came, and please come back. I want to talk to you when Brainstorm comes out, and let's do that, and let's talk about maybe you taking a gig behind the microphone with me. And me being your tech instead. Think of someone you'd like to interview. Okay?
Sounds like fun.
There you
okay.
go. There is lovely and talented Elaine Dietz, who has just taken her own life story and turned it into something wonderful. And there's a lesson there to live every day like it's your last, because you never know. Monday, Betty Lee Crosby is with me. Tuesday, Jill Gregory and Karen Tintori. They're going to be fun. And on Wednesday, Kendall Alexander, that wraps Women Writers Month in honor of women's history. Happy Easter to those who you celebrate. And peace, everybody. Thank you, Elaine. You're the best.
Thank you.
Have a great day. And thanks for being with me tonight, this afternoon. Wow. Afternoon. Thanks for being with me, everybody. Have a great holiday. And thank you, Mom and Dad. Bye.